Good morning. It's Friday, September 7th. I'm David Fair, and welcome to WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment. On the first Friday of each month, I'm joined by the Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters, Lisa Wozniak. With each program, we bring in an expert guest to explore an important topic pertaining to the health and well-being of our environmental present and future. Today, the topic is new corporate average fuel economy standards as set by the Obama administration last week and where we are headed with transportation and energy. By 2025, CAFE standard targets are 54.5 miles per gallon. Supporters contend it's going to reduce our dependence on foreign oil, create jobs, and improve the health of our environment. Detractors say it's misleading, and the cost of cars will quickly move out of reach for most Americans. Lisa Wozniak, welcome to WEMU once again, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, David. It's always a pleasure.
And our guest today?
Our guest today is Dr. Larry Burns. Dr. Burns is currently a professor of practice at the University of Michigan and was recently inducted into the National Academy of Engineering based on his leadership and contributions to automotive technologies. Between 1998 and 2009, Dr. Burns served as senior executive at General Motors, his title specifically Vice President for Research and Development and Strategic Planning. During that time, Dr. Burns expanded GM's research and development, quadrupled the number of patents issued for GM researchers, and much more. He is seen as an innovator, a technical expert, and an outstanding communicator. He is a major voice for the reinvention of the automobile and the diversification of transportation energy. We are truly delighted to have you on the show.
Thank you, Lisa.
My first question, Larry, you've been at the forefront of many changes in the automotive industry, the Volt as an example. What has driven this change, and what role specifically have fuel economy standards played in this?
Yeah. When you look at the history of the automobile, you can go back 125 years when Carl Benz drove his first gas-powered vehicle out of a barn. And what's fascinating about that history is it really hasn't changed a whole lot in 125 years. We still have gasoline-powered vehicles. They're controlled primarily mechanically, and we drive them. What we're now seeing is an opportunity to really transform the design of the automobile because a number of technologies are converging to make it very exciting. It's not just electrically driven vehicles that are phenomenally important to get to diverse sources of energy, because today we're over 95% dependent on oil for transportation, so we have to find other sources of energy. But it's also the fact that we see a future where cars can literally drive themselves. And all of this is being pushed forward, quite honestly, by consumers, the expectations of people and how they can move around and interact and do that safely, cost-effectively, and to do that in a way that doesn't harm the environment. So all of these things are coming together right now in a very, very exciting period. I think the next 5 to 10 years will literally transform what we know as automobiles and what we know as the way in which we move around and how we move our goods around.
There is an endeavor ongoing in Ann Arbor, just got underway, I believe either earlier this month or last month, where they're looking at truly what is a smart car, as it will tell you where to go and get you there on its own.
That's right, David. That's an extremely important initiative. The University of Michigan Transportation Research Institute is leading a major field study where we'll literally get thousands of people and vehicles that actually communicate with each other. Now imagine this, your car talking to another car, and when they get close to each other, one of them could say, hey, look out, I'm about to get in your path. Well, that's literally what's going on. We have this communication technology, transponders and GPS systems, global positioning systems, and now we literally know where each vehicle is, and we can determine how close they are relative to each other. We can share data on how fast the wheels are turning and the steering inputs that the drivers are putting in. We can actually conclude whether they might crash, and if that was going to happen, take some action and warn the driver and possibly even stop the car to prevent that. Now, a lot of auto companies have been working on this technology for several decades. It's coming to a point where we really need to try it out with real drivers and real driving environments, and that's what University of Michigan has been selected to do, to lead that study, working with the U.S. Department of Transportation and the auto companies. And the feedback we get, the data that we're going to collect from that, will really give us an insight into just how much more improvement we can get in safety in particular with that technology.
Is this kind of technology going to make irrelevant these new CAFE standards?
I think they're going to help considerably. One of the issues we have with fuel consumption in an automobile is the fact that cars tend to weigh 3,000 to 4,000 pounds and people tend to weigh 150 to 200 pounds. So when you do the arithmetic, when you burn a gallon of gasoline, that gallon of gasoline has energy content. We measure that in BTUs. When you burn that gallon of gasoline, 3/4 of that energy is lost as heat out the tailpipe. So only 25% of it turn the wheels. You weigh 150 pounds and the car weighs 3,000 pounds. That means almost all of that remaining energy is moving the car, not you. When you run all those numbers through, it turns out just 1% of the energy in a gallon of gasoline moves you, the person, and the rest is either lost as heat or is moving the car. Shame on us if we can't find better solutions than 1%. So why is connected vehicles, why are they so important? If we could find technology that literally eliminates the crash potential of a car, it doesn't have to weigh nearly as much. A lot of that weight of the car is there to protect you as the occupant and the structure of the vehicle. And quite honestly, a lot of the cost of the car, the safety systems are there. So the real big breakthrough with connected vehicles, and then I think ultimately in the future, cars that literally drive themselves, will allow our designers then to create forms of transportation that move us around the same way a car does, but maybe they weigh 500 to 1,000 pounds. And that's really a big breakthrough. So yes, a 54.5 CAFE is very, very important. It roughly is a doubling of what's going on. If you can get the mass down by a factor of 4 or 5 and get to electric drive, which is 3 times as efficient, now we're talking about a 15 times opportunity, not just a 2 times opportunity. So connected vehicles are a very, very important part of the energy and emissions future for automobiles.
So what does this mean for the manufacturing infrastructure, notably in Michigan, for the supply chain?
Well, it means a transformational shift, quite honestly, Lisa. And I think a lot of the auto companies are looking at that really hard right now. I was just looking at a study of what's called micro cars, really small vehicles. And there's literally about 50 of these concepts being worked on by different auto companies. A lot of them are European-focused or Asian-focused because that's where a lot of the big cities are and a lot of congestion is occurring. And one of the things that we really need to keep in mind is if these vehicles get that small, they have far fewer parts, maybe about 1/10 as many parts. And if they're electrically driven, far fewer moving parts because electric cars are much simpler from a mechanical standpoint. So it changes the supply chain dramatically. You know, as a
adversely? Is it going to cost jobs as opposed to create them?
Well, I believe, first, Dave, I want to make a point. As a strategist, you have to do unto yourself before others do unto you. You simply can't sit back and say the world's not going to change. You need to get in front of the inevitable. We've seen technology enable phenomenal change. So take the internet as an example. And certainly the communications and information technology changed the role of administrative assistants considerably. So a lot of professionals now do their own typing, they do their own communication support. But at the end of the day, when you go back and you ask, did the internet create jobs? Absolutely. Different kinds of jobs. So people in certain categories of jobs may be disadvantaged, but you know what? When the automobile came along and replaced the horse, the blacksmith was disadvantaged. And a lot of people who worked in maintaining horses were disadvantaged, but there was enormous jobs growth in the auto industry. So that's the nature of innovation. And I think our state, and I think it's fantastic to have University of Michigan, Eastern Michigan University, Michigan State, Wayne State, Kettering Universities, those kinds of universities can create the kind of talent to get in front of this future trend.
This is WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment. I'm David Fair alongside my co-host Lisa Wozniak. Our guest today is Dr. Larry Burns, and Dr. Burns is a professor of practice at the University of Michigan and director of the Earth Institute's Roundtable on Sustainable Mobility at Columbia University. And up until 2009, Dr. Burns was the Vice President of Research and Development and Strategic Planning at General Motors. Now, the auto industry has obviously gone through some rough times and some changes, and the government owns a significant portion of General Motors right now. How is the relationship between industry and government going to have to evolve in order to make the kinds of infrastructure changes, the kinds of ideological changes necessary to allow these kinds of technology and advancements to move forward?
Well, first, I think we need to get a common understanding within government, industry, consumers, voters, and others on just the nature of what these issues are. I don't think you can bring about significant change, which we're going to require to become sustainable in the future, without collective will. And I think the pathway to collective will is a common understanding. I'd like to think about this in a term I call the power of and. We tend to get trapped around this word or, and the word or implies trade-offs, A or B. I have to make a choice. In many instances, A and B are the best options. So let's take the debate on energy, renewable fuels or fossil fuels. I don't think that's the right way to frame this issue. I think it's renewable and fossil fuel. If you look at the plentiful natural gas that's becoming available due to technology, certainly we want to get that natural gas in an environmentally sustainable way. There's no option there. We have to manage those risks. But natural gas is so much cleaner than coal. And in fact, if we had a lot of natural gas, we could make hydrogen from it for fuel cell electric vehicles. And if the wind is blowing really hard, we can make electricity renewably, but that surplus wind energy could be stored as hydrogen because you could electrolyze water and store it as hydrogen, and lo and behold, that hydrogen can be used for transportation. So we've got to think about this as an and. That's a system to think about, where we have a system of renewable energy complemented by a system of fossil energy. So I think wind and natural gas and solar and natural gas really fit together beautifully, much better than coal and wind and coal and solar. And we have to think about the transportation sector at the same time we think about the residential, industrial, and agricultural sectors. People don't live their lives in sectors. We flip a switch, we turn on a car, we live our daily lives, and we don't think about, I'm now consuming in the transportation sector, I'm consuming in the industrial sector. We need to bring all that together into what I call the power of and, the power of thinking holistically. Part of the reason we have trouble moving forward politically is vested interests. There's very, very strong vested interests in what we have in place today. And in the area of transportation and energy, that's really evolved over about a century. Not an easy challenge to break that inertia and bring out some new ideas. So we have to work together and give these ideas a try at the right small scale and kick off that learning. But we have to do it in terms of how all the pieces fit together through the lens of the everyday person who's leading their life.
Well, in your role as a strategic planner and the power of and, how do you then bring in the and others, the stakeholders such as utilities, big oil companies, to buy into the notion of a transformative energy future?
Well, I think what we have to do is give some of these ideas a try so that consumers can really see what's possible. Let me give an example. The work we're doing at Columbia University on sustainable mobility is trying to combine a few big ideas. One idea is a self-driving car. The second idea, people sharing their cars. It's amazing that the cars here in the Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti area are parked 90 to 95% of the time. And if we did a calculation, if people shared cars in this community, we could probably have about 15% of the 200,000 cars that now exist in this urban area. So sharing cars and self-driving cars, and very importantly, a coordination mechanism. We call that the mobility internet. But imagine having an app on your phone. You walk out of King Hall, you push an app, and they know where you are because of GPS. And all you need to say is, I need to go to North Campus at University of Michigan. And next thing you know, within a minute, a self-driving vehicle shows up, picks you up, takes you there, drops you off, and that vehicle's already been redeployed after it drops you off to pick someone else up nearby. We have to try these ideas, and you need to show people, not do PowerPoint presentations, quite honestly, even radio shows. You need to get out there and do these things for real, much like what the U of M Transportation Research Institute is doing with connected vehicles. Do it for real. And then maybe the utilities can see what's possible. Maybe then the energy companies will see that there are ways of doing these things in a synergistic way and not simply protect the vested interest that they have.
You speak a lot about the difference between incremental and transformative change.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to how we began this conversation vis-a-vis the fuel economy standards and the increase therein, where do you see that fitting in? Is it transformative? Is it incremental?
The good thing about the 54.5 target is it has both. And I think one of the big news stories in energy efficiency in automobiles in the last 5 years isn't necessarily the Chevy Volt or the Nissan Leaf. It's the remarkable improvement we're seeing in internal combustion engine vehicles. A few years ago, there were only two cars on the market that could get over 40 miles per gallon on the highway. And last time I checked, about six months ago, you could get 10 of them. And what's happening is the standards, in part, are part of the solution, but also engineers are finding ways to make the engine smaller, so you can do with the four-cylinder engine, which you used to need six cylinders to do, and then turbocharging them so that when you really need that boost of power, you can get it. And then we're getting calibrations for those vehicles, eco-driving, so to say. And so I think what's really exciting right now is just how much improvement we're seeing in the combustion engine vehicle. Can we go all the way to 54.5 with that? No. So that standard's been set high enough so that it's going to continue to stimulate the work by the auto industry on battery electric vehicles, fuel cell electric vehicles, and even greater improvements in combustion engines. So at least I see it as sort of a good on both fronts. It will drive it incrementally the way it's phased out over time. But when you look out there in 2025 and you say, can we get all the way there with what we know how to do incrementally? Mm-hmm. No. So we're going to have to keep pushing forward on the transformational opportunities as well.
There is a cost to that advancement, and we've seen the prices of cars go up. If you want to buy the hybrids, they are significantly more expensive. Electric cars are more expensive. And to get to 54.5, there are those who say that the average cost of an automobile in 2025 is going to be $50,000 or higher. That's going to eliminate 80-90% of America from being able to buy a car.
Yeah. I think it's really hard to predict where we're going to be in 2025. The beauty of innovation is it's not one step. It's a constant learning cycle. So you have to get out there with the generation one design, the first effort. Think about your first cell phone. And now think about what we have in a smart device. And you think about how fast that happened. And it didn't happen in one step. Once you realize there's a value proposition out there for a consumer that something can work, engineers are very, very good at then improving that value and reducing that cost. And part of it is to get a supply chain in place. One of the reasons battery electric vehicles cost a lot of money is there's not a lot of suppliers making the electric motors, the power electronics, and the batteries. You compare that to the number of companies that are making engine parts for combustion vehicles, and those companies have been competing for decades for the auto industry's business. Once we can see a value proposition in an electric vehicle, and by the way, I think the right kind of battery electric vehicle is a small class of vehicle. These batteries on the Volts and the Leafs are pretty big batteries. The battery on the Volt is about the size of a University of Michigan offensive lineman, 6'9" and 390 pounds. It's a big battery, and it takes you about 35 miles on a single charge. So that's carrying an awful lot around. You get that car down to 500 to 1,000 pounds, and then you play out the learning cycle on the batteries, we may be talking about batteries that are one-fifth that size. Maybe at some point you can literally take it out of your car into your apartment. The key is to kick off that learning dynamic, to find a reason to keep learning, and that reason usually is a consumer wants this, and ultimately I can make money by providing that. You can't take your eyes off of those two bookends. People want it, and companies want to supply it because they can make money. Whenever you get in that trap of trying to push a technology into the market that the consumer doesn't want or that the supplier can't make money on, then government subsidizes it, and you run out of the subsidy, things fall apart. The only way you get to that magic tipping point where the value exceeds the price and the price exceeds the cost is by learning and getting out there and trying things.
So the excitement that you exude in talking about this, do you feel that actually is found in the auto industry writ large, from the top executive to the manufacturing food chain?
Not everybody, but the beauty of innovation is that you don't have to be a major OEM to play in this industry. I mentioned that I was doing some reading recently on these micro cars. Yes, traditional auto companies are playing there, but I think what really jumps out are names of companies you've never heard of. There's startup companies, there's entrepreneurs. I mean, it wasn't that long ago where we never heard the word Google or we had never heard the word Facebook. And what we're seeing is an accelerating of that innovation cycle. And the time frame in which you get out there and you get a dominant position in an industry and then you get attacked and suddenly you're the incumbent and you're being disrupted, that is really, really shrinking. So the speed of innovation is accelerating. So I don't think you have to think about the mobility transformation we're going to experience solely through the traditional lens of auto companies as they've existed for the last several decades and the automobile business model, which is a major company designs and engineers a car, sells it to you through a dealership, and you buy it and you own it privately. You let it sit parked 90 to 95% of the time, and you use it over a 5 to 10 year period, and then you buy another one. There are all kinds of business models out there around this concept of sharing rides. In fact, last time I looked, there were over 25 startup companies with names like Relay Ride and Uber. We know Zipcar locally. 25 companies are out there playing in this arena where they think they can make some money by helping people share an asset. So it's that dynamic that's exciting. Does every leader in the auto industry understand that, and are they leading according to that? No. Are there some people out there who are visionary? Are there startup people? Are there companies outside the auto industry that might be seeing this as an opportunity? Absolutely. I'm an advisor to Google, by the way. In the spirit of openness, I advise Google with 20% of my time on their self-driving vehicle program. Imagine that. Google's working on cars that drive themselves. And who would have figured that out a few years ago?
Well, the future is both scary and bright, so we are going to look forward to another visit from you down the road to see how far we've come in such a short period of time. Thank you very much for your time, Dr. Burns.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Lisa.
That is Dr. Larry Burns, professor of practice at the University of Michigan and the director of the Earth Institute's Roundtable on Sustainable Mobility at Columbia University. Lisa Wozniak is executive director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. Lisa, we'll see you next month.
I look forward to it, David.
I'm David Fair, and I thank you for joining us for our First Friday Focus on the Environment. It's a monthly segment on the first Friday of every month, and you only hear it on Morning Edition on 89.1 WEMU.